Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. On the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. We've been all over the place, in every place from Jamaica to La Quinta. Get out your maps, boys and girls. We're at 25 degrees, 47 minutes north, 80 degrees, 7 minutes west. Well, actually, we're in two places today. The other location is 47 degrees, 34 minutes north, 7 degrees, 36 minutes east. How can we be two places at once? Because we are at Art Basel, that's Switzerland, in Miami Beach, Florida, coming to you from the Miami Beach Convention Center. This is the Olympics of the art world. I mean, I can't underestimate how powerful this is. Every major artist, every major gallery, 250 galleries, 2,000 artists, and everybody you can possibly imagine, ranging from Steve Martin to Alex Rodriguez, shows up here to buy art. And, boy, we're not talking like this is not the starving artist sale. I'm going to tell you that. We're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem, and we will solve it right here on the air. Lots of stuff in the news this week. Of course, the fallout from the obligatory dysfunctional family get-together known as Thanksgiving, and the TSA, otherwise known as Pat-Down City. Well, was it or wasn't it? How bad was it? Guess what? Wasn't that bad. Here's what happened. A lot of people got smart and didn't travel on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. They traveled on the Friday before that Wednesday or the Tuesday before that Wednesday. So the crowds are sort of like spread out, number one. And number two, you know, the idea here was more of a PR disaster for the TSA than the reality. The TSA did have a disaster on their hands because they never really properly educated the public as to what was going to happen. And the technology was not implemented overnight because it couldn't be. The original plan was to have all of these scanning machines at 2,200 checkpoints at 450 major airports around the United States. The reality was there were about 450 of these machines at about 69 airports. And even the airports that had them didn't have all of them. So you weren't forced to go through one. Maybe you had a choice, or the TSA had a choice. So it didn't really happen. Now, in the meantime, everybody went up in arms, so the pilots ended up getting a free pass. The flight attendants ended up getting a free pass. And what that meant is that the pilots now don't have to go through the machines. They can get two pieces of ID and go through around it. Same thing with the flight attendants. They even had a problem with kids. Think about this. If you're trying to be a responsible parent, you've been telling your child all these years about not letting strangers approach them, talk to them, even touch them. Here comes the TSA with a guy named Vern. Well, guess what? Now the even TSA has announced they're going to do a less invasive pat-down situation for kids. Now, the bottom line is, what about profiling? Now, let me describe what I mean by profiling. It's about a conversation. You know, it's not about trying to figure out if the guy looks Arabic or Muslim. That's stupid. It's a conversation what you have as a security officer with questions that cannot be answered by yes or no. Because the questions that could be answered by yes or no are moronic. Have you packed the bags yourself? Yes. Had they been with you all the time? Yes. And did anybody give you anything? No. Those are the same three questions they've been asking since 1988. And they still ask them overseas. It's ridiculous. No. Here's the thing. It's basic homicide interrogation technique. If I think you killed somebody, I'm not going to say to you, did you kill them? What I'm going to say is, what'd you do with the gun? And if you answer that question, we have something to talk about. And it's also about being visually aware. If it's a hot August afternoon and I'm showing up at the security checkpoint wearing three overcoats, five mufflers, galoshes, and a headband, you know what? I don't care if my driver's license matches my passport. You might want to talk to me. And the TSA right now, unfortunately, has not been properly trained to think. They've been put in the unfortunate position of being robotic morons. And that is not security. That is, as some critics have called it, security theater. And you know, it's something we really have to address. So the wake-up call here, being the bad public relations disaster of the TSA, was, you know what? We understand the technology. We know why we need the technology. It goes back to the underwear bomber of last December 25th. Let's be honest. The guy got through two checkpoints in the middle of winter with no bags and not even an overcoat, and nobody stopped him. It's the same example I just gave you about the three overcoats. So now we have the technology to try to solve that problem. Well, technology cannot solve any problem without the implementation of common sense. And I would like to see common sense. If you disagree with me, well, then, of course, we have an argument, but give me a call. 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. Or if you've got a better idea. You know what somebody came up with about the scanning machines? Of course, it would never happen in the world of civil rights. But they should actually have a huge neon sign in front of every scanning machine saying, if you are wearing an explosive device and you go in this machine, you will be detonated. That would solve a lot of problems. That's a deterrent. And then, you know, okay, once a year you get some stupid hunter who brings his gun in there and he goes. But the bottom line is that's not going to happen. We need a much more commonsensical approach to security than what we've had. And we're not getting it. And we're still not, I don't care what the airlines and the government are saying, we're still not at 100% of screening air cargo. You know why? Because they delegated it to trusted shippers. I've never met a trusted shipper. I don't even trust myself to ship anything. I mean, so they're not doing it. And do you remember the days right after 9/11 where if you were going to check bags, you could not check a bag and then not take the flight because they would know that you weren't on the flight because they positively matched bags to passengers and then they'd take that bag off? Guess what? They're not doing that anymore. I guarantee you, I'm here in Miami right now. Miami hasn't done it in years. You know why? You can see all the bags piled up from flights that have arrived hours ago with people who weren't on those flights. And that's not because the flight was delayed. It's because there were too many bags on the flight. So bottom line is they're not even doing that. Somebody has to tell me if you're going to have a policy, you need to enforce it unilaterally and across the board, and you have to do it with common sense. We're seeing neither here. All right, that's my diatribe on security today, but it's not going away. The only good thing about it is they're preparing us for when all the machines are in place, and they still have to deal with the issues of what? Privacy and possible radiation issues. Because as any radiologist will tell you, even though the dose that they're claiming that you're getting in these machines is infinitesimal, radiology doses are based on what? Cumulative doses, not individual doses that go away. And you know what? For frequent flyers like myself, I don't want to glow in the dark. I'm sorry. Just a thought of mine. I don't want to be a nightlight. I don't think you want to be one either. And until they can convince me otherwise, I will always opt for the magnetometer as long as I possibly can. And the bottom line for that is, if I happen to go through the magnetometer and I alarm it, I'm going to get patted down anyway. It's the same pat down. Without getting totally naked at the airport, my advice to you is undress before you fly. Everything that you could possibly have in your pockets. I'm not just talking metal. Everything. Out of it, in the bin, because if you get through the scanning machine, you're going to have to do it anyway, and you're going to delete a line, and I don't want to be behind you. When we come back, a guy that I am always behind, our good friend from NBC News, Kerry Sanders, will be on board to talk about where he's been lately, and boy, it's been a lot between Chile and Haiti, and now he's back home in Miami. Back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Art Basel in Miami Beach right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. We are in Miami Beach at the Convention Center for Art Basel. And if you've never been here, wow. 2,000 artists, 250 galleries, and art that you cannot believe, and some prices you can't believe either. But you know what? It's free to look. After you pay the admission prices to come in, it's absolutely worth the experience to see the movers and shakers in the art world. This really is the Olympics of the art world in this hemisphere. And, of course, there's a similar one that's in Basel, which is where it all started. And this has been going on now for 9 years here. Next year, the 10th anniversary, I'm telling you, I will be back. Our number is 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And one of the things I want you to do, I do this every week. We're not going to fail this week again. Go to our website with the most imaginative name possible, petergreenberg.com, because on there you will find a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard, essential work, that important work in Haiti, in Chile, in Western China, and in the Gulf of Mexico, just to name a few, where you can not just donate $10 on your cell phone, which of course is okay, you can get actively, physically involved and do some really good work. And not only that, you want to be an insider? Get on our website, because last week we were in La Quinta, California. Before that, we were in Jamaica. If you want to listen to those shows, sign up to become a travel insider to get access to all of our radio archives. We archive everything. And a membership also means you can access my radio show anytime you want and get behind-the-scenes interviews from yours truly. Again, the website, petergreenberg.com. I'm now joined by a good friend of mine, former colleague at NBC when I was there, and a man who probably can match my frequent flyer miles these days, Kerry Sanders, who is actually home in Miami. That's a news bulletin in and of itself. Hey, Kerry.
Hey, good to see you, and it's great to be here.
I know. I mean, following you, I mean, my God. I mean, of course, you were commuting earlier in the year to Haiti, and of course, back recently because of the cholera outbreak.
Yeah, and I was really kind of saddened to see what hasn't happened in Haiti with 1.5 million people who are still living under tents. And, you know, it was a horrible hurricane season. They had to endure some, not full five, you know, Category 5 hurricane, but they had to deal with some bad weather. And it's a very slow go for progress.
You know, we've said this from day one, that the rebuilding process in Haiti would be at least 10 years, I mean, a generation, if you will, because, I mean, they really took such a hit. But they, even before the earthquake, there was no infrastructure there.
Yeah, and I don't think people quite understand that, like, Port-au-Prince, which was a city built maybe for 400,000 people that has more than 1.5 million people living there, never really had infrastructure since the Marines put it in place back in the early 1900s. And that's the U.S. Marines when we were there.
And there's the problem right there. And so, you know, just because it's not front page news doesn't mean it's not on our front page as travelers, as people who want to see things good in the world. What did you see in terms of volunteer people down there helping out?
That's a great story. There are Americans, there are Europeans, there are volunteers from around the world who were there dedicating a tremendous amount of time. I mean, the money flowed, but the time, the actual people on the ground. I spent some time with some doctors from the German Red Cross who are working with the cholera patients in their tents. Now, they were maxed out in this little province that I was located in, 40 patients, and they were trying to bring them back to health as quickly as possible because more were arriving. Sadly, some of them passed away. I think the most horrific story was, as I was there, two young boys, 1-9, 1-13, brothers were brought in, and they were barely clinging to life, and their two other siblings and their parents passed away on the way in.
Wow.
And it has everything to do with the speed of attention, of medical attention. Cholera is not a very difficult disease to deal with.
If you get it right away.
If you deal with it right away. And these people are living, in this case, I was out of the city. They were out in the mountains. They weren't sure what was going on. And when they finally realized they need to make their way in, you know, they lost so many fluids, they just didn't make it.
I mean, that's one of the reasons. I mean, cholera notwithstanding, there's so much work to be done.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you pointed it out very well when you talk about the fact that Haiti is a country that, even before the earthquake, needed so much help, and volunteers have been going there for years. The one criticism, and I think it's really spotlighted now, is there's very little coordination among the NGOs, as they're called, the organizations that are non-governmental organizations, the volunteers who all come down. And so there is a case where, after the earthquake, they've been rebuilding an area, and a volunteer group was putting up structures, only to discover that the land they were using was not for them to put these structures up. They had to take them down so another volunteer group could come in and put in their structures at that location.
That's just ego.
That's
ego stupidity.
Yeah, and it happens.
So how many trips did you do to Haiti this year?
Well, it's more a matter of cumulative time there than I think it's trips. But, you know, a good portion of I have to do a math here, but it's been a while. I've spent a fair amount of time in Haiti, and, you know, over my lifetime, you know, I think if you add it up, I've spent more than a year and a half of my life in Haiti.
Wow. And then, of course, not too long ago, at least 69 days in Chile,
yeah,
with a good news story for a change.
I have never, ever had an opportunity to do this. You know, and you'll appreciate, yeah, this because you cover the travel industry like nobody. And we all, our eyes are always drawn to the plane crash.
Yeah.
And we sometimes get that opportunity to cover the amazing plane crash where the plane crashes and everybody walks out alive.
Yeah.
But you're never there when the plane crashed.
Yeah.
I went down to Chile and I got a chance to basically, using a euphemism here, you know, see the plane crash. These guys were stuck down there. And then we got the exciting moment as one after the other after the other, all 33 of those miners making their way to the surface. And I'll tell you what, it worked like they said it would. And how often do we hear that where engineers say it's going to work like this, politicians say it's going to work like this, alleged experts say it's going to work like this, and it actually works like this?
I bet you that the president of Chile could probably run again and win.
I don't think that's going to be
a problem. I know. He did okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, talk about merchandising at the end of that. I mean, they ended up on every show other than Dancing with the Stars.
And Edison Peña, one of the great stories, because he was an Elvis fan.
I saw him sing,
he's on his way in January to Graceland.
Well, the best story of all for me, I'm sorry, I'm a cynical guy, was the guy with the mistress.
Of course.
Come on.
Of course, because, you know, his secret life was revealed as he was down there. And, of course, the joke was, of everybody down there, he didn't want to come up.
There is a great story that happened about 20 years ago. True story about a professor at Stanford who was 51 years old, who married, wife, four kids, little league coach, right? Active in the community, and flying all over the place, right? One day, just collapses and dies of a heart attack, and they have a memorial service for him on the campus, and two other wives show up, one from Oregon, one from Idaho, with two other sets of kids. Nobody even knew, and now we know why he collapsed of a heart attack. Nobody even knew that they existed, right? And the best line of all is they went to his apparently official wife and said, "Oh, my God, I mean, this is such stunning and terrible news to find this out after he died, that he had two other wives and two sets of kids. I mean, what's your reaction to this?" And her answer was, "I just want his frequent flyer miles." True story. You got to love that. But what was the lesson learned in terms of the news coverage of the Chilean situation?
You know, it's interesting because we're in an international environment, and I don't think it would have played that way in the United States, because I think that there would have been all these attempts to protect the people, the miners, the families. But down there, they decided that they were going to be as transparent as possible and open this up for everybody to see. So when the cameras went down that tiny little, they call it the paloma, the tiny little tube that they dropped down there when the men were down there and they shot the videos, they brought them up and they shared them with the world to see. And then when they were bringing them up, they put cameras in locations so everybody could witness this all. And really, as much confidence as there was also, you know, a real reality check that you know, I called them alleged experts earlier. There are no experts because they've never really done it like this before. So they were learning on the fly.
They were basically flying by wire.
Yep, exactly.
Unbelievable. And, of course, it put Chile back on the map.
In a way that I think showed the world that this is very much a first world country for people who have not traveled there and don't know. And about the only thing they know about Chile is maybe they get their wine from there, or that they get their salmon from there, or they remember that there was an earthquake.
And, by the way, I will tell you this from personal experience. Chile has probably one of the most advanced telephone systems in the world. You want telecommunication, that's where you go.
Well, we found that out because we were using the Internet in the middle of the desert outside of Copiapó, and the speed on the Internet was faster than anything I've experienced ever in the United States anywhere.
Carrie Sanders, great to see you here in Miami Beach. I'm sure you're going to go see Art Basel, but always fun to see you. And I hope we'll do it again.
Back at you.
We'll be right back with more from Miami Beach right after these messages. Stay with us, everybody.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. 33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Art Basel in Miami Beach, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. It might, you know, it might be a reasonable question to say, okay, Art Basel, shouldn't that be in Basel? Well, the answer is, it is in Basel. Except for the last 9 years, it's also had a sister act right here in Miami Beach called Art Basel Miami Beach. But joining us now, someone who knows all about that, in fact, he's calling in from Basel, is Rudolf Suter, who's an art historian and, like me, a journalist based in Basel. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, you know, when we talk about Basel, I'm going to admit to a little bit of ignorance because, for me, I'm a watch fanatic. And so, of course, you always have the watch shows in Basel, correct?
Yes, there is always the Basel World. Yeah, the watch and jewelry's fair. Yeah, yeah.
And amazing stuff there. I mean, and much like that, the Art Basel. You come here, at least in Miami Beach, 2,000 artists, 250 galleries representing them, some absolute amazing works of art. And how long has it been going on in Basel itself?
Art Basel was founded in 1971, I think, something like that.
All right, so we're talking at least, what, almost 40 years. What is specifically, I suppose, unique about Basel that would allow it to host it that way? I mean, what is it about Basel that says we are an art history city, we are an art city, we're an artist city?
Yes, well, it was founded among else by Mr. Beiler, who was an art dealer. So there was also a commercial intent behind the founding of the Art Basel.
Right, but I'm saying that the city itself, it goes back hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes,
goes back to the Celts.
Yeah, exactly. Since 80 before Christ, there's a permanent settlement in Basel, so we have a quite long history. And, Basel as an art town exists only since the 20th century, maybe. Yeah.
And, of course, the nice thing about Basel, when you think about it, if you go back to the Second World War, here you were surrounded by Italy, by Germany, and...
Yeah.
You came through unscathed. Nobody destroyed the city.
Nobody destroyed the city, because Switzerland was neutral in the World War.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The other thing about Basel, of course, and it's not just about Basel, it's about Switzerland itself. And I should say that we love doing our radio show in Switzerland. We've done it from Lucerne. We did it earlier this year, as a matter of fact, from the Jungfrau all the way at the top of the mountain. You have the best train system ever.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah. That's possible. Also, a very dense net,
Yes, it is. And I will tell to all my friends who are travelers, you know, it's one thing to take Amtrak in this country. It's another thing, if you're going to take a Swiss train, they really run on time to the exact minute.
Usually.
And if you get there a minute later, that train has gone. It is long gone.
That's right.
And in fact, when we did...
The same is true for the streetcars, for instance. They're also very punctually.
Wow. I will tell you this, that when I was there, we did the show from the Jungfrau, I was able to actually go out and purchase a Swiss rail clock, exactly the same kind of clock that you see at the train station. I have it in my office in New York, and you know what? It tells perfect time, and you better not be late to my meetings now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what would you say is the most surprising thing about Basel for first-time visitors that they're not going to expect?
Well, maybe the old town. We have a late medieval old town, yes. So for many people, this is maybe the most surprising place, because most people think of Basel as an industrial town, because there's also much chemical pharmaceutical industry. But in fact, Basel has the core of Basel, the center, is late medieval. and very well preserved. So this is maybe surprisingly for many visitors who don't know anything about Basel.
And easy to get to because of the train system.
Yeah, it's very easy to go to Basel, yeah, by train. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Basel is in Basel, railways from France, from Germany, from Switzerland come together.
And not only that, the first railway in Switzerland was built in 1844. Guess where? In Basel.
That's right. Yeah. In Basel. Yeah. That's right. Well, it was the line from Strasbourg in France to Basel. Yeah.
And your museums go back to 1849.
Well, even longer. Well, our museum, the root of our museums is a private collection called Ammerbach Cabinet, which was established in the late 16th century already. And in 1661, the Council of Basel acquired this private collection and opened it to the public. So it was one of the first public museums in the world.
Amazing. Well, right now we've got Basel here in Miami Beach. I want to thank you, Rudolph, for calling in from Basel. We'll come see you there, but right now Basel is based right here at the actual convention center in Miami Beach with Art Basel. We'll be back with more right after this.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
And welcome back. 43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Art Basel in Miami Beach. No, it's not Switzerland, but it might as well be. We've got 2,000 artists, 250 galleries. Amazing, amazing experience. If you've never had it, get down here and do it. It's every year at this time, or you can always go to Basel. And given the choice, you know what? I do both. Anyway, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. If you're like me, you grew up with one of these guidebooks. It was called the Mobile Guide. There's also the AAA, but everybody remembers the Mobile Guide and the five stars or the five diamonds. Well, guess what? It's no longer the Mobile Guide. It's the Forbes Travel Guide, and they've just released their winners for 2011. And, of course, that's pretty cool because it's still 2010. Joining us now, Shane O'Flaherty, who's the CEO of Forbes. Hey, Shane.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. So it's been an interesting transition. I guess Exxon doesn't want to be in the travel business anymore. You guys get a chance to do it, and you're off and running.
Yeah, well, and we're excited of our partnership with Forbes and continuing their providing the consumer with inside information to help them make more informed decisions in the travel space.
Well, let's talk about the star because, you know, I've always said, and you can disagree if you want, that the star system or the diamond system has somewhat been misleading in the past because a lot of hotels love the idea of getting the 4 or the 5-star rating because it's great for employee morale. It allows them to charge a higher rate or to basically justify one. What has the criteria been or how has the criteria changed for you guys in terms of how you actually rate the hotels and the restaurants?
Well, I think over the years, and especially in the last probably five to eight years, for the stars and the star system, we've made a consistent effort to focus more on the experience of travel. So 75% of the weight is based on the overall experience. So when we inspect a hotel, we spend 2 nights, 3 days at a property, traveling the same course as a consumer would. So the weight scale has moved from 50-50 or 75-25 from facility to be more about the experience for the consumer, and that's really what we focus on. Because you can build a wonderful hotel, spend millions of dollars, but if the staff is not engaging and open and receptive to the consumer, the experience is not as what the consumer would expect. So,
and who are the people who are your inspectors? I mean, do they have a particular, consistency? What do they have in common, I guess?
Average age probably between 30 and 60. So it's a mixed part of individuals, and we're trying to really traverse the course a normal consumer would. And when we go to a resort, we bring couples. Some people actually bring their children, and we inspect the entire process based on what that resort is meant for, and then how does that fit into, you know, ultimately the consumer choice on, you know, where they're going to make their next journey or, you know, travel plans.
So you actually have children who will actually go out there and trash the rooms for you.
I don't think we can go that far. But, you know, you have to order, you know, as part of the experience, you have room service, you do a bar lounge sequence, not with the children. But you're trying to experience all aspects of the hotel like a normal consumer is. We're not out there tricking them, but we want to ensure that, you know, once we put a star on it, that the consumer's expectations are met once they choose that hotel, you know, whether it's a 5-star or a 4-star experience.
I mean, I love it. I would assume that one of these children inspectors would say, not chicken fingers again.
Come on.
Now, another difference is, I mean, I remember, you know, mobile 5-star guides were basically guidebooks that were printed, that were physical, you could take with you. You guys are going online now.
Yeah, so next year we're planning on trying to bring the experience of travel to the online space. So we're very excited about that direction and really trying to provide the consumer with insight and information, you know, like they were at the property, and how do you deliver that, and how do you engage the hotel, the people of the hotel, with the consumer in a very proactive way so they know what to expect and know what to experience once they get there. If they look online today, it's really all about the price of travel. So how do you bring that experience to the online space? So we're excited about launching this site, you know, in second quarter of next year.
You know, what I agree with you on this. It's not about the price. It's about the experience. It's not about the cost. It's about the value.
Exactly. And I think most people, when they're planning their vacations or they're planning their trips, want to know that once they arrive, they're going to get the experience that they expect and the value that they expect. And there's still some great deals out there for the consumer, and they get some great experiences. And if you're just driven by price, you could enter a hotel which looks nice, but then you're not treated as well as you probably should be.
And if that happens, the man to call is Shane O'Flaherty, CEO of Forbes Travel Guide. Hey, Shane, really, thanks a lot for joining us. We'll look forward to the online version next year. How many different editions?
There's 12 different divisions out there in the marketplace.
Wow. Very cool. I'm glad you're maintaining the tradition. We will look forward to it. We'll get you back on the show when you're back online again, okay?
Thanks very much. Take care.
You got it. We'll be back with more from Art Basel in Miami Beach right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Art Basel in Miami Beach. How cool is that? Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you already know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com, and we'll take your number, your phone number, your problem, your question, and solve it right here on the air. If you've been watching the CBS Early Show, you know that earlier this week we did that as our regular segment on the show where we're answering the complaints and solving those problems when things go wrong. And if you know you travel a lot, you know almost everything goes wrong at one point or another. We've been talking about Art Basel here, about this amazing sort of a sister city relationship that happens between Basel and Miami Beach. It's been going on for 9 years now. And it's not just the art, it's also the architecture. It's an unbelievable, I would guess, convergence of art, artists, architects in one, you know, very compressed amount of time. But boy, oh boy, is it fun. And joining me now, someone who knows a little bit about that on both ends of that dial, Chad Oppenheim, who's the founding principal of Oppenheim Architecture right here, right?
Yes.
So you get both. Because your wife is from Switzerland.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, my better part.
Okay, now that you've covered that base, you can go home again. But let's talk first about the architecture, because, you know, Miami Beach, of course, you know, for the last 25 years, such a great focus on the Art Deco and the design district and trying to maintain that style. Mm-hmm. How does that compare at all with Basel?
Well, I think what's interesting about Basel and Miami is that Miami is very much about lifestyle, and Basel is very much about life science. And there's a great sort of interesting relationship between the two cities. I mean, both very much focus on architecture and design and art. And the architecture here is, I think, more playful, more about pleasure, or at least the work that we try to do. And it's more about how you live and how you can maximize your enjoyment in living in Miami, selling the dream of paradise. And then in Basel, it's a little bit more serious, a little bit more scientific, a little bit more precise.
Well, that's the Swiss.
Yes, yes.
Come on.
Exactly, exactly.
You know,
so the buildings are better put together. They're more intricately detailed, similar to
Are you
watch.
Saying that better constructed buildings are in Switzerland?
Oh better. Not even, it's not even in the same league.
You know. No wallboard there.
No.
I mean, no fiberboard there.
It's incredible, the difference in construction. And believe it or not, the cost of construction is
about
the same or even a little less over there.
You know what's interesting about Switzerland? You go to any wall. I'm not making this up. It could be at a hotel, a restaurant, a bank, somebody's apartment, and you hit your foot, hand against
solid,
the wall.
Solid, yeah.
You hurt your hand.
Yes.
I mean, that is solid plaster.
Exactly.
Right?
It's incredible.
Here, you're echoing.
Yes, yes. But, it goes into every single detail of construction. I mean, the window systems there are way more highly efficient and technical.
Wait, okay, now, I know this is a travel show, but I want to know about window systems.
Yes.
What
yes.
makes them so good?
Well, the new codes in Switzerland require you to have triple glazing and certain insulation values and other things that are way beyond our standards here. I mean, the buildings there are incredibly energy efficient, and we focus on energy efficient
okay,
buildings.
Okay, so then my question to you, because you're based here, what have you learned from the folks in Basel that you've actually been able to incorporate here?
Well, we don't necessarily able to incorporate it specifically in Miami, but most of our projects are actually around the world. But we have a great synergy because we have offices here and in there, and so we're able to kind of bring the lifestyle with the life science and helping people to create greener buildings.
So basically, I can call you on the phone and say, hey, Chad, I want the Basel triple glazed windows at my house, and you'll make that happen.
Sure. We're actually trying to do that for a project in Los Angeles right now. We're doing a large villa for a movie producer in Bel Air, and we're trying to bring in the windows from Switzerland, actually.
And is he on board with that?
He is. And they're actually probably less expensive than doing them locally.
Now we're really going to get into a travel aspect.
Okay.
Because my house in Los Angeles was destroyed in the earthquake in 1994. Completely had to be bulldozed.
Wow.
And I went to Bangkok, and I had my house built there. Then disassembled,
really?
Crated, brought over to Los Angeles, and reassembled there, and it was less expensive
yeah.
to do it.
Yeah.
And my doors were not like these Home Depot hollow doors.
Sure.
My doors are 300 pounds each.
Oh, yeah. No, I would imagine.
Right.
I would love to see it next time I'm there.
There's a $20 tour. You can do that. I don't have the triple. No, but I'll do that in exchange for the triple glazed
okay.
window.
Okay. We'll make a deal.
But the point is you can actually go now and travel with your architect or with your designer or on your own. Get your ideas there and bring them back.
Definitely.
That's the cool thing about
Definitely.
Travel.
I mean, we try to use as many local materials as possible. I mean, especially when we're working in beautiful environments, to use the local stone, the local wood. We're finishing actually a house right now in Aspen where we're using all old barn wood and all local stone to make the house. The wood is 250 years old. So
see, what you got to do is you got to bring back the Swiss from Basel to do the work here.
Definitely.
That's
definitely,
what you got to do.
Definitely. Well, we're working with some amazing consultants, the people who work on Novartis campus, and we're trying to establish a global network of like-minded individuals who can bring the technologies globally. And we also have a big delegation here from Switzerland, Green Tech, where all the green technology companies have come to Basel here, and we're hosting them for dinner tonight at our house. You're more than welcome.
I wish I could, but here's my bottom line. For you, this has got to be orgasmic to come to
Basel.
It's
incredible. I mean, it's so inspiring to see all this art and design. Of course, Design Miami right across the street, bringing all the best furniture and object design around the world. It's really incredible.
All right, here's our deal. When I come back, I'm hanging with you.
Okay.
Is that
perfect,
a deal?
Perfect. Anytime.
All right. Chad Oppenheim, the founding principal of an amazing title of a name, Oppenheim Architecture. Unbelievable.
It took me a while to figure that one out.
Me too. That music means we're out of time for this hour. Come back with us because we'll be back with more from Art Basel in Miami Beach right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful first weekend in December, wherever you happen to be. Did you survive your dysfunctional family get-together, otherwise known as Thanksgiving? Well, good, because then you get to come with us, because we're coming to you from, get out your maps, boys and girls, 25 degrees, 47 minutes north, 80 degrees, 7 minutes west. We are in Miami Beach, Florida, but actually we're in a part of Switzerland today, because it's called Art Basel. And, of course, every year now for the last 9 years, this has become the quintessential art experience of this hemisphere. It is the Olympic event. 2,000 artists, 250 galleries. It is serious major league stuff. And if you ever get a chance to come down here for this, you will do yourself a great service. It's just in terms of an experience. We're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And lots of stuff to talk about in the news. I spent the first hour talking about, of course, the TSA and the pat downs. I'm not going to do that now. They've gotten too much press on this. You know the drill. Just get out there, smile. Don't put anything in your pockets of any kind. And you know what? Just hope there's no guy named Byrne who's going to do the pat down. Just enjoy yourself and get through that thing, because the only reason why we're out there is to get on a plane and leave. We don't want to live at the airport, and I don't want to be stuck behind you. All right. You know what I'm saying? Undress before you get to the airport. Get a couple of Ziploc bags. Put everything in your pockets, including your rabbit's foot from 1947 and your Lucky Charms, and just get rid of them and put them in your carry-on bag. I do not want to be stuck behind you in line. Let's go to some emails. We got one from Claudia in Ridgefield, New Jersey. And I have to say, I read this email. We've been getting so many calls about this, especially in terms of the TSA. Could you please advise this to pets who will travel in the cabin and the new body scans? I have no objection to the body scan, but what do I do with my dog while I'm being scanned? Well, obviously the TSA ain't going to walk him. His carrier is going to go through the x-ray machine, and he usually walks through the metal detector with me. There is nothing on the TSA website, and we have lots of holiday travel planned. I doubt the folks at Newark Airport will hold him, I just said that, while I get body scanned. Well, guess what? Here's what you do. You present the animal to the security officers at the checkpoint. You may walk your animal through the metal detector with you. Now, if that's not possible, then your animal will have to undergo a secondary screening. Oh, my God, a pat-down for the dog. Wow, what are we, I'm sorry. But they will tell you, one thing the TSA says is that your animal will never be placed through an x-ray machine. However, you may be asked to remove your animal from its carrier so that the carrier can be placed on the x-ray machine. Wow. And by the way, if your animal is carrying a BlackBerry, no, I'm kidding. Okay, let's move right along from Elizabeth in Flanders, New Jersey. My son is going to be in London for spring 2011 as part of a study abroad program in college. My husband and I plan to go to London when his term ends in June, and then the three of us will fly back to the States together. Given the recent announcement of the royal wedding, how far ahead should we buy tickets for June? And how far ahead should we book hotels for a week's stay? Well, my understanding is the royal wedding is not, I don't know exactly when it's going to be. It's either April, May, or June. I haven't figured that one out yet, and I will get back to you on that, because bottom line is the royal wedding is only going to be, you know, about a four-day window of craziness, because the British do two things very well, weddings and funerals. And, you know, it's all about that. So you don't want to go anywhere near London for two reasons. Forget the crowds, the prices. I mean, everybody and their mother is trying to merchandise this, and you know what? I've got to know. Oh, wait, where is this date? Oh, you know what? We're cool. I knew. I said April, May, or June. The wedding date's in April. You got it covered. You want to go in June. By that time, they'll already be selling 50,000 commemorative plates on discount because nobody will want them anymore. So you're covered. Wedding's in April. You're going in June. You're covered. Okay? There you go. And the bottom line on that is, for merchandising, you're not going to get anywhere near the wedding in April anyway. It's going to be totally restricted. And, you know, watch it on TV. It's like going to the Super Bowl. Why? Why would you want to go to the game? You know what? Watch it on TV. It's easier. And you know what? The British do other things very well. They do dysfunctional divorces, too. But that's Prince Charles, and we won't talk about that. Anyway, so April 29th is the wedding, and, of course, the Olympics are next year. Two things you don't want to do. You want to go before the Olympics or after the Olympics, and that's the cool thing. You're going in June, especially if you're going in early June. Guess what? You get to go before the crowds and after the wedding crowds have left, which means you'll get a deal. It's the same thing about the Olympics. If you ever want to go to the Olympics, whether it was Sydney in the year 2000 or Athens in 2004 or Beijing in 2008 or London in 2012, you go a week after the games are over because it happens every 4 years. The country thinks that a three-week event is going to save their economy forever. And what do? They build 25,000 additional hotel rooms thinking that they're all going to be there forever. No, it's a three-week event. So when the event is over, they go, uh-oh. Oh, what about the afterglow? There is no afterglow. It's called discount. And ask the folks in Vancouver what happened after the Winter Olympics. It's called discount. And it's happening right now. Even as we speak, they're building more hotels than they need in London. And so the week after the Olympics, you get to win a gold medal for smartness by going then. Okay, I just thought I'd mention that because where you're going right now and when you're going, it's fine. The wedding hysteria will be over, and Prince Charles and Camilla will be asking other questions. But that's another story. Anyway, bottom line about we'll do one more email message, too. We've got one from Jan in Nashville. My family has decided on Turks and Caicos for our holiday vacation. We are looking for an all-inclusive spot. Do you have any ideas for us? I do. Because we actually did our radio show from there. They're going in April of 2011, which means they'll be missing the wedding. And they can watch it on the TV from the Turks and Caicos. Go to the Veranda Resort. It's part of the guys who still own the Grace Bay Resort. Great all-inclusive. It's about $640 a night, but it's all-inclusive. And I'm telling you, other than motorized water sports, it really is all-inclusive. And that includes everything. That's your accommodations, your meals, everything. Good idea. And if you don't want to do that, there's one called the Tuscany there. Also great. Two-bedroom condos start at about $875. But then again, you got a family. Two-bedroom condo. It all works out. And, of course, there's beaches. You've heard of beaches. Their rates are a little bit lower, about $320. A little younger crowd there. But if you're going with a family, try the Tuscany or the Veranda. That's what I would suggest. From we've got one more letter I want to read. And it's an interesting letter because it involves the dog again. I mean, these pat-down machines are really creating a problem for the TSA because the real question is, and it was asked by my other viewer, what do we do with the dog? I want to see what happens when you walk up with Fido and say to the TSA guy, hey, can you hold him? Can you walk him? Can you curb him? Can you scoop up after him while I go through the scanning machine? It's amazing how fast that dog's going to end up going through the magnetometer because nobody wants to hold the dog. In fact, I think we should all get to the airport with dogs because then the line will move very fast because nobody wants to hold them. Anyway, just a thought. Just going to bring that out there. Okay. Anyway, on a more serious note, because we're going to talk about this with our next guest, that's Patrick Smith. He, of course, you can read him on AskThePilot.com. When he joins us, we're going to talk about what's been going on out there about the TSA, the pat-downs, the double standard with the TSA when it comes to pilots as well. Back with more from Art Basel in Miami Beach right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from Art Basel in Miami Beach. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. Speaking of that, we'll go to a quick email here from Joshua in Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Peter. My wife and I have done quite a bit of air travel with our almost 8-month-old son, also named Peter. I'm very happy to hear that. He was born in Israel, but I will be taking him on my own to visit his great-grandmother in Huntsville, Alabama, just before Christmas. Since I won't have my wife to help, how will security work? We'll be at the Delta Terminal, LaGuardia. Will one of the TSA people hold him? Here we go again. It's like the dog. Will one of the TSP people hold him while I go through the new machines at LaGuardia? I know you have to raise your arms, or will I have to opt for one of those invasive pat-downs? Will they allow the baby food to go through the checkpoint, or just formula breast milk? I know it will be tougher without both parents traveling, and I want to do what I can to ease the process. Here's what I think you should do. If you listen to the earlier part of the show, show up with your baby and a dog. Totally confuse the TSA. No, I'm kidding. You know what? My next guest might even have an answer for this. He's a regular on our show. You can read about him all in AskThePilot.com. He is a major pilot for a major airline. How do you like that, Patrick Smith? Hello, Patrick.
You make me feel so important.
Well, hey, can you answer Joshua's email? What do you do with a baby?
I think the first thing you do is write a letter to Congress and see if we can get this TSA situation straightened out, even if it means getting rid of the agency entirely, which is sounding more and more like a good idea at this point.
Well, let's get real here. We know why it was started, because of September 11th. We know it became a huge bureaucracy. We know that we like to say the fish stinks from the head, and if you don't train your people properly to have good intuition and use common sense and street sense, you're really doing, and you said it before, I'll say it again, security theater. We've just gone through the introduction, if you will, of the new scanning machines, which was a public relations disaster for the TSA. The outcry was worse than the actual reality, but it was an outcry nonetheless, and nothing's really been resolved, has it?
No, not really, and TSA has just dug in its heels and doesn't seem interested in changing their protocols at all. You know, it's interesting you pointed out that the agency was started after September 11th. The big irony there is that the 9/11 attacks really had nothing to do with airport security when you really look at it. You know, what weapons the guys used really didn't matter. They could have succeeded with pencils if it came to that. It was all about the element of surprise. It wasn't about the type of hardware that they used to get through airport security. They were taking advantage not of a loophole in security, but in our mindset, in our expectation of what a hijacking was going to be like. But having said that, you know, all of this recent controversy about the scanners, while I think it's an important conversation because of important privacy issues, and while it's also good that there's finally a groundswell of resistance against TSA or some of their policies anyway, on the other hand, I'm somewhat disturbed by all of this controversy because it kind of distracts us, I think, from asking more important questions about TSA's approach to security overall. I think the scanners are just a symptom of a very dysfunctional approach to airport security, and by that I mean a couple of things. First, we have this system that treats everybody who flies, you know, from a baby to a uniformed crew member as a potential terrorist. And in a system where you in an air transportation system where you have more than 2 million people flying every day, that's just not a sustainable approach. And ultimately, our own rules are not enforceable because the system is just too big to have every single person looked at on equal footing. The other thing is, these scanners are part of an arms race, really, for lack of a better term. I mean, first it was pointy objects, then it was liquids and gels, and then shoes, and then came the underwear bomber, and now we're being groped and looked at naked. I mean, what's next? I mean, we need to step back and realize that we're never, ever, ever going to be fully safe and protected from every conceivable means of attack, and we need to start, you know, trying to get more bang for our buck and reevaluating the hierarchy of threat and concentrating on areas where there's a more potent threat instead of this zero tolerance across the board philosophy that we have.
Well, you know, Patrick, without being insensitive or flip, I've always made this argument that if the underwear bomber had stood up in the course of trying to detonate his bomb and sang "Mary Had a Little Lamb," the TSA would institute a new rule forbidding nursery rhymes to be sung on airplanes.
Right. I mean, it just goes from one thing to the next, and TSA says, well, we need to stay one step ahead of the terrorists. And, you know, actually, the terrorists are almost by definition one step ahead of us. That's the way it's always going to be. and a resourceful enough saboteur is always going to figure out a way to skirt the system. So we need to realize we're never going to be fully protected. And the other thing we need to come to grips with is that real airport security doesn't even happen at the airport at all. It's not the job of the concourse screener. It's the job of counterintelligence and the FBI and the CIA and Interpol and all of that stuff that goes on behind the scenes. That's not to say that the airport screener doesn't have an important job, but it's not the job that they're doing now.
Right. Now, it's safe to say we all want great airport security. I don't think there's any polling data that suggests otherwise. Even in the wake of the scanning machines and all that controversy, it was still 8-1 in favor of better security. So that's not really the issue. It's the implementation of it.
Well, what is better security? I mean, do Americans want to feel safe, and do they want to have this presentation of security, security theater, as you call it, or do they want to actually be safe?
Well, sure. I mean, I go back to the stupid questions that were asked as recently as a week ago when I was coming back from Jamaica. It happens when you come back to the United States on a U.S. carrier. They always have somebody there at the instruction of either the TSA or the airline ask you the three dumbest questions known to man, because they can always be answered by the same three answers: yes, yes, and no. You know, did you pack the bags yourself? Have they been with you at all times? And did anybody give you anything? So even if English isn't your first language, you can still get a guy to remember it's yes, yes, and no. That's not solving anything.
We have this obsession with minutia and with kind of rules for the sake of rules. It's a lot of window dressing and not a lot of real, down in the dirt security. And that's not to say TSA isn't doing good work in places, but it's usually not the stuff that we see. It's the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And it's ironic, while they're still, pulling corkscrews and then whatnot from people's luggage and haggling with travelers over the size of a toothpaste tube, that they're still not screening cargo, for example, for bombs.
Yeah, you and I have talked about that a lot. And I have a good friend of mine who flies for Continental. And she is a very, very, wonderful pilot and totally a professional. And she just almost got out of control one day at a security checkpoint when one of the TSA screeners wanted to take a pair of scissors away from her. And she said, "Excuse me, when I go through this checkpoint, I'm going to be flying the plane. What do you think I'm going to do?"
Well, the same thing happened to me. I had a butter knife taken from me while I was on duty in full uniform, and it's just absurd. I mean, there are so many holes in the TSA approach.
Patrick, wait a minute. Patrick, I got to ask you a question. You've opened the door here. What were you doing with a butter knife at security?
I have a little
silverware. I want the truth.
The truth is I have a little silverware collection that I carry in my rollerboard bag that's very useful on those short layovers in hotels when I need to have some ramen noodles or whatever. I have a knife and fork and a spoon there.
So we should do a new book called The Adventures of Patrick Smith and His Butter Knife.
I can teach you how to make ramen noodles in a coffee maker.
At 3 a.m. I love it. But, it's interesting. With the scanning machine issue, we had a situation where the pilots got a free pass, if you will, only after complaining about not having to go through the machines. Now you show two pieces of ID, and you don't necessarily have to do that. The same thing with the flight attendants now. Is that correct?
That's correct. Initially, we were being run through the scanners, and if you opted out of the scanner, you were put through the invasive pat down along with everybody else. As an airline pilot, I'm perfectly willing to go through security along with everybody else because, as security experts will tell you, if you're going to screen, it's important to screen everybody. But that's only if the screening itself is effective, efficient, reasonable, rational, and the screening we have now is not. So if you're not going to fix it, then please let crew members go around it, especially when you've got tarmac workers, the caterers, the cargo loaders, the baggage handlers, all of these other people that have full access to aircraft. They are not subject to regular TSA screening. And this is a huge contradiction, a huge double standard that, for reasons I don't necessarily understand, the media hasn't really jumped on at all. It could be a big scandal, but nobody's talking about it.
I mean, it's amazing to me. And, we're going to stay on top of that. I promise you we will. Patrick Smith, you can read him at patrickasthepilot.com. Patrick, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Back
anytime,
right
after. Peter. Thank you.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
Welcome back. 33 minutes after the hour. Hope you're having a wonderful first weekend in December wherever you happen to be. I'm lucky enough to be in Miami Beach at Art Basel. I'm taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. And check out our website, by the way, because we have a comprehensive list in there. It's petergreenberg.com of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work in Haiti, in Western, in Chile, in Western China, and, of course, in the Gulf of Mexico. There's still so much work to be done. And if you want to listen to all of our shows, sign up to become a travel insider to get access to all of our radio archives. We archive everything. And what a membership means is that you get access to my radio show anytime you want, but you get behind-the-scenes interviews from guess who? Moi. That's petergreenberg.com. You know, I talk about Art Basel, but most people listening to the show outside of Miami who are not in the art world may not know what it is. It is truly the Olympics of the art world. 2,000 artists, 250 galleries that converge right here in Miami Beach for the ninth year now. An amazing display, but it, of course, it all started where? In Basel, where it's still going on. And joining me now is Hans-Peter Wessels, who is the state councilor from Basel. And there really is a unique sort of partnership between Miami Beach and Basel. But how did that start? I mean, somebody woke up in Basel one day and said, let's go to Miami Beach?
Well,
you were freezing in Switzerland. You had to come over here in January. No.
Yeah, that's a true reason why we did it, because it's nasty weather in December in Switzerland, so that's the reason to come here. No, being serious, well, Art Basel is an art fair which is very similar to Art Basel Miami Beach and exists for over 30 years now, and it was expanding and becoming more and more successful, so we were looking for opportunities sort of to export this really great, beautiful, totally successful product, and I'm happy that Miami Beach has been chosen as a second place for the Art Basel, and it flourishes here, so we're excited about that.
But how did you choose it? Why Miami Beach?
Well, of course, the U.S. is a very important market for art, and then we just looked around and chose the most beautiful place in the U.S.
Okay, that was lovely. Your check is in the mail.
Sure. No, I mean, we wanted to have it with sort of a half a year apart from Art Basel in Basel, which takes place in June. So we're looking for a place which would be nice in December. And December in Miami Beach is really
perfect. Yeah.
Southern Florida in December is, you know, for people coming from cold Europe, it's terrific.
It is. I see you're short sleeves on today. You're happy.
Yeah, definitely.
But when you go back to Basel, what's interesting about Basel is when people ask me to describe Basel to them, I'm saying it's like one of the most incredible open-air archaeological museums in the world.
That's true.
Explain that to me.
Well, the city of Basel has a very, very old history. It has already been sort of a settlement used by Romans, and even before by the Celts, they had big settlements in that area. So our history goes back at least 3,000 years. 3,000 years history of settlements. And during the medieval, Basel has been a fairly rich or very rich and fairly powerful city. So we have a very nice old town which has been nicely conserved. So many houses in the center of Basel are around 500 years old, and this gives really an amazing setting.
Plus you have the carnival.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
We're very proud of that, of the Fasnacht, as we call it, the carnival. That's a very traditional event taking place normally in February during 3 days, and it's a 3 days amazing party in Basel where everybody's dressed up. They are, you know, big exhibits, big lanterns. It starts, and that's very special, it starts at a Monday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. So everybody gets up at 2 o'clock and goes to the place.
No, they don't get up at 2 o'clock. They don't go to bed the night before.
No, that's not true. They go to bed very early, the professionals, and then
the amateurs.
Early. Amateurs. Yeah. The visitors from the States, they might have a nice party before, but the professionals, they go to bed. And so then at 1 minute before 4 o'clock, all lights are shut down, and then at 4 o'clock it starts in the dark, and the lanterns they carry are then illuminated.
And then the music. And then the music.
And the music, fantastic drums and pipes.
You forgot something.
What?
The drinking.
Oh, that starts afterwards, yeah. White wine is very popular during Fasnacht, and so, you know, in Europe there are a lot of nice wines, and people, they enjoy the life during
and that's the Monday
days.
Following Ash Wednesday.
Yes, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love it, yeah.
And it sort of doesn't stop until Wednesday at 4, no, actually, Thursday at 4 o'clock in the morning, so 72 hours.
Have you've done it, of course.
Of course,
have
yes.
Did you go to bed at any time during those 3 days?
Oh, you have to. But not for a long time, actually.
Exactly. Now, the other thing I like about the marketplace, the markets.
That's beautiful.
I know. I mean, people just come in. Of course, I'm a watch nut, so I come for the watch fair, too.
Okay. That's in April.
I know.
The Basel World is the world's largest and most meaningful fair for watches and jewelry, and that's really fantastic.
But right now, we're at Ground Zero in the art world right here in Miami Beach for Art Basel.
Absolutely.
Hans-Peter Russels from Basel, thank you for joining us, man. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
I'll see you at the festival, at the carnival.
You're coming?
I'm going to go to sleep right now.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Looking forward.
You got it.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by
Travel Guard. Visit travelguard.com/unlucky. Tell us what makes you the world's unluckiest traveler, and you could win a $10,000 dream vacation. Brought to you by Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. 43 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you from Art Basel in Miami Beach. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. You know, when we talk about airports that are fun to be at and airports that are tough to be at, weather plays a huge role. And it's always me that ends up in a thunderstorm at Dallas or with, ground holds because of rain at LaGuardia, or same thing with thunderstorms in Miami. Well, guess what? I got two out of the three yesterday because I was trying to get to Miami from LaGuardia in the middle of a rainstorm, and you know what? I didn't make it. I ended up coming down earlier today. So joining me now, who knows all about this, the meteorologist for the Weather Channel, Dr. Greg Forbes. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Peter. How are you doing?
Good. So, you know, when we talk about you've got a list, which I love this, of the top worst. The top worst. I love that. Bad weather airports. I mean, some of them are no-brainers. We know about Chicago because Chicago has two seasons, right? Winter and construction.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're up on the list, right? O'Hare has got to be one.
Yeah, definitely. O'Hare ranks number one on our list there, and a lot of the cities in the top part of our list: Detroit, New York, Minneapolis, Boston, Philadelphia. They're in the northern tier of states where, in the wintertime, of course, you get a lot of snow, you get a lot of low clouds and lots of wind, and still in the summertime, though, you get lots of thunderstorms. So it seems like almost no time of year can you be free of weather delays in those areas.
And then there's one on your list which most people would not guess, but I know it to be a fact because it happens all the time. And that's not because of storms, it's because of low clouds and what we like to call in Southern California sometimes the marine layer. That's San Francisco.
Yeah, absolutely. San Francisco is notorious for having low clouds and fog, and it just stalls around. Of course, you've got not only the Pacific Ocean, but then the San Francisco Bay there that's putting in a lot of moisture, and there can be that inversion, that little warm layer loft that just traps in all that moisture and makes for that low cloud layer.
And which is why I always tell somebody, because 8 miles away, it's not there. Which is why if you're going to San Francisco, fly to Oakland, you'll actually get in.
Yeah, and that's the case there. And that's a frustrating thing about the summer, too, for thunderstorms, because quite often the airport itself will not have the thunderstorms, but somewhere nearby in the route that the aircraft have to take to get into and out of the airport, there can be a line of thunderstorms. And of course, the airplanes can't fly through those. They have to navigate around, and that really snarls up the rate of traffic inflow and outflow from the airports because of what they call in-route weather.
And yet there's another airport that's not on your list, which I think is interesting because most people would think it would be on your list, and that's Salt Lake City. And yet, for some reason, they've managed to keep that airport open in every kind of weather. I think they have the best record of not closing that airport.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. They're sort of in the Intermountain West, that they're a little bit protected from the Pacific moisture by the Sierra, and then, of course, the Rockies to the east protect them from the Gulf of Mexico moisture getting in, so they don't get quite as many of the rainstorms or the fog conditions or the snowstorms as places that would be directly west of the Sierra or then east of the Rockies, because they're a little bit drier most of the time. Now, they do get occasionally some snowstorms, and they once in a while, even with a north wind, will get some lake effect come down off of this Great Salt Lake. But they benefit a little bit from that somewhat drier. They're sort of the northern extension of the desert southwest, as we sometimes call it.
And then, of course, you've got the busiest airport in America. It made your list, Atlanta.
Yeah, Atlanta. We, of course, have lots and lots of thunderstorm delays and rain and low cloud problems just like everywhere else. They've done some modifications to the airport over the years to make it easier to continue to have multiple runways in operation during bad weather. That's a big problem that some airports get shut down to or closed down to only operating one runway, and when they're used to having two or three, and that, of course,
exactly.
Really cuts down on the rate at which airplanes can land and take off.
Well, amazing stuff. Of course, the list, you can find it all on weather.com. Dr. Greg Forbes, who's the meteorologist for the Weather Channel, thanks for calling in, and hopefully I'll be able to get out of here.
Good luck, Peter.
Thanks, Doctor. We appreciate that. Back with more from Mark Fazel right after these messages. And let's hope LaGuardia stays open just a little while longer.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
And welcome back, 52 minutes after the hour on this wonderful December weekend in Miami, actually Miami Beach at Art Basel. Peter Greenberg here with you, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Most people probably have a difficult time connecting the dots between Basel in Switzerland and Miami Beach. How did that marriage ever happen? Well, somebody who knows a little bit about that, who you might not realize has also lived there, but he's also got the title of the University of Miami's Vice Provost. So there's a combination we'll have to explore. Richard Bookman, hello, sir.
Hi, Peter. So great to be with you today.
Now, you used to live in Basel.
That's right. My wife and I and my kids lived there for 3 years. In fact, one of our daughters was born in Basel, which is, let me tell you, a traveler's experience, quite special.
But bottom line is, this has got to be a very exciting experience for you to have Art Basel here in Miami Beach.
This is fantastic. I mean, living in Basel, I'm a scientist and was there as part of my scientific training. But the arts in Basel are just extraordinary and exemplified so nicely by this great story of the art museum wanting to buy a Picasso, didn't have the money, So they put it up in a referendum, and the citizens voted to raise their taxes to buy art. So that
name another city in the world where that would have happened. Hey, look, we want to buy a painting. We want to assess you money.
Raise your taxes, right.
And they voted for it.
And they voted for it.
And where is that painting today?
In the Kunstmuseum in Basel, in the main art museum of Basel.
And how much does it cost to see that painting?
No, it's actually free, believe it or not.
Unbelievable. That's even more amazing.
And Picasso was so impressed at the level of popular support for culture, he actually donated further works to the Kunstmuseum in Basel.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Incredible place. Incredible
wow.
place to visit.
So if I did a little finger painting here today and gave it back to you, would you go over to Basel, raise some money for it? No, it doesn't work that way?
It depends on your name. I'm not sure Greenberg quite has the cachet that,
oh,
that Picasso does.
This ends the interview right now.
Well, let me tell you, there's a little pastry shop in New York you may know about.
William J. Greenberg.
Exactly.
No relation to me, but very dangerous place.
Home of the best Schnecken on the planet.
Explain Schnecken. Come on. Come on.
So it literally means snail, but it's what in common parlance in America these days is called a cinnamon bun, which is just a travesty.
No, you don't want to call it cinnamon bun. You want to call it
a schnecken. Exactly, Peter. Exactly. You understand.
I do.
Good.
So give me an idea, if you can, about how this unique marriage happened between Basel and Miami Beach.
Well, look, I think, Hans-Peter, I think, laid out part of the logic really, really well. There's this incredible base of culture in Basel that's looking to expand. And one of the things that's really impressive about Basel in the last 10 or 20 years is breaking out of a slightly staid Swiss tradition and Swiss culture and becoming much more, you know, outward-looking, entrepreneurial, and innovative. And that's reflected here, Peter, because this is not only about the relationship between Miami Beach and Basel in art. We are following up
science,
absolutely.
Music.
We've got a green technology event, later this afternoon. So the relationships between Basel and the world through Art Basel Miami Beach are growing with every year of this event. It's really fabulous for those of us that call Miami home these days.
So the fact that you lived there for 3 years, it's sort of like accidental and incidental that we should have Art Basel here.
Absolutely. I've been working on this ever since I left. No, I'm just kidding. it's really fabulous. And Art Basel in Basel is an even more extraordinary event, and I hope a bunch of your listeners take the time to go visit what somebody told me before I moved there to live, the greatest that Western civilization has to offer is what Basel has to offer. It simply doesn't get any better than that.
Well, when you can combine the density, if you will, of art, of science, and music in one city.
It really is.
And art, by the way, also including architecture.
Right, right.
Now, I got to ask the question. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say one thing that I hope, you know, your listeners appreciate is the extent to which Basel, although it is very Swiss, is really a tri-national city. When we lived there, we had this fabulous apartment overlooking the Rhine River. It was about a 12-minute walk to Germany and about a 22-minute walk to France. And so,
depending on how much Schneckle you'd had.
No Schneckens.
No Schneckens.
We had Berner Brot, we had Basler Brot, we had plenty of things to add to the waistline there, but no Schneckens.
Okay, I have to ask this question.
Please.
This is the ninth year they've done Art Basel here. Have you ever bought a piece of art here?
Well, as you said at the beginning, Peter, I'm an academic. I'm a scientist. I work at a university. So pretty much everything on the floor here is out of my price range for an academic. So on the other hand, there are, you know, things that Art Basel Miami Beach has created around town that are more affordable. But this is for folks with bigger paychecks than mine.
Actually, this is a place where you walk around. They take over the entire convention center here. It's all open space. It's phenomenal. And you walk in, and you just start inhaling. It's like, oh, my God.
Right. I can't believe they have that. And if I were somebody else, I might be able to afford it.
You could actually watch other somebody else's affording it.
Right, right. But or pretenders. That's the other fun part. The people watching at Art Basel Miami Beach is also worth coming.
So it's great street theater.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Some of the best.
So you go home and your wife said, I hope you didn't buy anything. No, I was just watching the street theater.
Exactly.
Okay, just double checking. How often do you get back to Basel now?
About once every 3-4 years, something like that.
Has it changed much?
I think the big change, I was there, lived there in the late 80s, and I think the really big change actually is the appreciation that the old base of big pharma only has changed. It's a much more open city, much more entrepreneurial.
Richard Buchman, the University of Miami's vice provost and the Schnecken expert of the entire Western Hemisphere. That music means you're out of time for this hour. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide and Art Basel Miami Beach right after this. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend, this first weekend in December. Guess what? I'm having a great weekend, too. Once I could get out of the weather and get down where I'm supposed to be. And guess where I am? 25 degrees, 47 minutes north, 80 degrees, 7 minutes west. I am coming to you from Miami Beach, Florida, and specifically the Miami Beach Convention Center, and even more specifically than that, Art Basel, Miami Beach. We're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. Speaking of that, let's go right to our callers right away. We've got Kara on the phone from Pride's Crossing. Where is Pride's Crossing, Kara?
Well, it's about 25 miles north of Boston on the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, it sounds beautiful. I know it's in Massachusetts, right?
That is correct.
And what can I do for you today?
Well, I'm going to virtually take you to a slightly colder place than where you are right now. I have booked a ski vacation trip for my family. We're going to go this upcoming March. Unfortunately, my mother-in-law is not in very good health. And so we do run the possibility that we might have to cancel this trip. And my question to you is that I booked the airfare part of it using American Express frequent flyer miles.
Right.
And when I looked into insuring this trip, I was told that the only thing that they would insure was the amount of the fees, which is minimal. I mean, it's about $25
a ticket. Who's they?
American Express.
Ah, that's your first mistake. All right. You never want to inquire about insurance from the travel provider themselves.
Okay.
So what you've done is the frequent flyer miles do have a value because it's what's getting you to Whistler. You also have booked a hotel, I believe.
Yes.
So that you have the cost of the trip itself. So what you want to do is buy something called trip cancellation and interruption insurance, but you never buy it from the first party. You buy it from a third party. And in this case, you can buy it from TravelGuard. You can buy it from Access America and a number of other outside agencies. And any travel agent can sell it to you. Now, having said that, Kara, I have to give you another little caveat here, and that is every policy is different because it ranges in premium cost from between 9% of the cost of your trip to about 13%. And the reason why there's a difference is because there are some policies that will cover you if the airline goes out of business or if the ship, you know, has a fire, God forbid, or doesn't sail. That's not the policy you want. You want the policy that allows you to cancel for any reason. And the one that I like in this case would be Access America. It's a more expensive premium, but it covers you for the cost of the trip. Now, the interesting thing about the mileage situation is, unless I'm mistaken, is if you cancel the trip and don't use the miles, you can redeposit the miles.
Oh, okay.
And if you redeposit the miles, then you're not out any money.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're really insuring here is the cost of the hotel and maybe what the deposits were paid or any kind of stuff like that. So make sure you make sure that that's the case. But in my experience, that's really what you want.
That sounds terrific.
Okay, does that help you out at all?
Yes, and in terms of just one quick question, redepositing
sure.
the miles, that would be a question to put to American Express.
Right, and now American Express might have a fee for that, but then your insurance would cover that.
Okay.
Meaning there might be a $75 or $100 fee to redeposit the miles because these guys want to make money every time you even breathe with miles.
Terrific.
Yeah, they do. So you're not in bad shape at all.
Well, I really appreciate you debunking this whole trip insurance mystery to me.
You got it. Happy to help, okay?
Thank you very much, Peter.
Anytime. Have a great trip and enjoy it.
Thank you.
All right, we've got an email here from Elizabeth in Flanders, New Jersey. My son is going to be in London, and he's going to I see what this is. Yeah, this is an easy one. Look, bottom line is your son is going to be in London going to school, and you want to go visit him. The problem is he is going to be in school for at least 10 months, so you can't really buy a round-trip ticket for him. You can certainly buy a round-trip ticket for yourselves. What do you do with his ticket? Well, here's what you do. Right now, if you look at the airline computers, what you're going to find is that they're not really programmed to give you a discount for that kind of travel that far in advance. So what you might want to do, because you know he's going to be there for at least 10 months, and a one-way ticket is basically prohibitive in cost. So explore something called an RTW ticket, a round-the-world ticket. It's valid for a year. So as long as you head up in the same direction, you can't double back, which is going to be great for him because he's going to get a chance to see the world. He starts his trip first going to London, and then when school is over, he goes all the way around the world, stopping at least 12 different locations. It's his great summer vacation, then comes back east to New York. That's the easiest way to do it. If you can't do it that way, then there's another way. It's a little trickier, but it works. You buy a discounted round-trip ticket. Actually, you buy two of them. One that goes over when he goes to school, and you know going in that you're not using the return ticket. But the round-trip ticket is a lot cheaper than the one-way ticket. You just throw it away. And you do the same thing when he comes home. You buy the round-trip ticket knowing you're not going to use the return portion. The airlines hate it when I say it, but you know what? If you go to a supermarket and you buy a six-pack of Coca-Cola and you only drink three of the Cokes, the Coca-Cola police do not come and throw you in Coca-Cola prison. It's your choice not to use that other coupon. You will not be penalized for it. And the fact that the airlines have a bizarre pricing scheme that penalizes you for flying one way, guess what? Beat them at their own game, playing by their rules. Buy yourself that round-trip ticket and just, you know, make the decision that you're not going to use the second portion of the coupon. You have no penalty for doing that. Okay, that's my advice. And the same thing happens domestically. Let's hear it for airlines like Southwest and for JetBlue that are still selling one-way tickets. It forced a lot of the major legacy carriers to match it. And in some cases, those one-way tickets are pretty inexpensive now. Some of the airlines, like United, have come back with those round-trip tickets requiring a Saturday night stay, and you have to book it 2 weeks in advance. You know what? No, you don't. Go to their competing carriers that offer one-way tickets and do it that way. You'll be much happier that way, and so will your wallet. And that Saturday night stay restriction, I can't believe they've come back with that. It's a joke, because when they come back with that, we come back with Plan B, and that's called the back-to-back ticket. And you know what that is? Let's say I want to go from New York to Los Angeles in 3 weeks, and I want to go on a Monday but come back 2 days later on a Wednesday. Well, the airline's going to tell me, we're going to charge you a lot of money because you didn't stay over a Saturday night. Okay, so here's what you do. You buy one ticket 3 weeks from this Monday, going from New York to Los Angeles, and coming back 3 weeks later. You don't want to come back 3 weeks later, do you? But that's how you buy the ticket. Then you buy a second ticket 2 days after you get to Los Angeles, which is the day you want to come back from, another round-trip ticket which emanates in Los Angeles and goes Los Angeles to New York, going back 3 weeks later. And if you plan it right, for less money than they wanted to charge you for one round-trip ticket, you get two round-trips that you get to take on your schedule and double the mileage. How about that? It's called beating the airlines at their own game, playing by their stupid rules. The Saturday night stay requirement is the stupidest rule ever. We need to get rid of it. Something just told me I just did. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Art Basel in Miami Beach right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour. Hope you're having a wonderful December weekend wherever you happen to be. We're lucky because we're down south. We are, well, 25 degrees, 47 minutes north, 80 degrees, 7 minutes west. We are in Miami Beach, Florida, at the home of Art Basel in Miami Beach. We're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you can always email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And speaking of our website, petergreenberg.com, I encourage you to go to that website because we've got a comprehensive list there of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work down in Haiti, in western China, in of course, the Gulf, and in Chile, where even they had an earthquake earlier in the year. A lot of work being done that there that you can actually get involved in. We talk about this all the time, volunteer vacations. It's one of the fastest growing segments in the travel industry because it allows you to actually give back and you get so much more in return. I'm a member of an organization called Airline Ambassadors. You, of course, can go to their website, which is airlineamb.org. That's airlineamb.org. We've got thousands of flight attendants and pilots and mechanics as members and people like you and me who donate their time, their energy, and their expertise all over the world. We're doing between 7 and 10 missions a month to orphanages all around the world. It is really important work, and I'm telling you, some of the most amazingly wonderful experiences of my life have been on those missions. But Airline Ambassadors isn't the only group out there. Of course, I told you we have a comprehensive list of all these organizations. And one of those organizations I was with in Peru, working with them up way up. I mean, we're talking at the 13,000-foot level in a place called Ayacucho. And the name of that group was called Cross Cultural Solutions. And not too long ago, I was in Denver, Colorado, seeing a couple of friends of mine and bumped into an old friend of mine who I knew as somebody who was very much involved in the ski industry. Her name, Kristen Rust. And I said, "Hey, Kristen, what are you doing?" And she said, "Well, actually, I just came back from Kenya, and I'm about to take off again to do volunteer work with a group called Cross Cultural Solutions." So I'll let Kristen tell us where she is. Kristen, where are you right now?
Hi, I'm in San Carlos, Costa Rica right now.
And what are you doing?
Well, this time around, I'm teaching English to a bunch of students who are studying English. They're actually really good, so we're doing a lot of conversational English at the INA, which is the National Institute of Learning here in Costa Rica.
And what, you know, what did you do last year in Kenya? I mean, what, you know, here you were in beautiful Aspen, Colorado, having the great ski bum life, and then you just woke up one day and said, "I'm leaving."
Yeah, I went to Kenya actually with a group called Heart for Africa, heartforafrica.org, and it was just a cliche, mind-blowing experience. It really just changed my life. You come back with a different perspective on everything once you've seen a place like Kenya. And so what I decided to do is cash it all in. I quit my job. I cashed in my 401k and found Cross Cultural Solutions to do some more long-term trips. So this
now,
spring,
what was the catalyst for it? I mean, you just woke up one morning and said, "I'm out of here"?
Yeah, pretty much. I experienced Kenya, and I came home. I went back to my desk, and I just said, "I can't do this anymore. I can't even bring myself to do this work that seemed worthy but a little frivolous to me after that experience." And I'd been doing, you know, PR work for 15 years, so I thought, I can take a break for a year. It's okay. I just wanted to do something that was better for the world and good for me. That's what
I wanted to do. So you found Cross Cultural Solutions. What was required of you? I mean, did you just show up and they said, "Here, go to Kenya"? I mean, it was a little more complicated than that, wasn't it?
It's really not complicated at all. Cross Cultural Solutions is a great organization because you can spend as much time as you want between 2 and 12 weeks in a place, which I think is great because it gives you an opportunity to really immerse yourself in the culture. They want you to not only give back and help the community, but they also want you to share in the culture and bring that back with you. I went to India and also Morocco this year with them, and it's so incredible to, of course, go work in a daycare, work in a women's empowerment group. But what's great is I get to learn about the Muslim community, and I get to bring all the positive things that I learned from the Muslim people back to America. And you bet
we need a lot of that right now because there's so much ignorance out there on both sides.
There really is, and it's tragic because they're the most wonderful, caring, giving people, and they love America. They love Americans, and they wanted me to know that. And there's a lot of misconceptions. So when you do a program like this and get to spend 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever you want, you really get a sense of what the people are truly like and not the gossip and the scary stories that we sometimes hear in the media at home.
I would suspect that when you came back to Colorado, then you were in for a different kind of culture shock, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Kenya, it took me about 3 months to come down from that. It was really, it had a great effect on my life. It just, it really did. And so I decided, because you can get bogged down in how sad it is and how impossible fixing it is. So what I decided to do is just turn it around and do what I can. And, you know, I didn't have a ton of money, but I fundraised for a lot of my trips. I was very fortunate that people were so generous. And once you're here, your meals are taken care of, your housing's taken care of. They take you on excursions. You get cooking classes, language classes, and you work about 4 to 5 hours a day.
Now, here's my question, because most people, you know, would say, well, what can I bring to the party? What is it that I do for a living that's going to help somebody overseas? And the answer is, if you're a butcher, baker, a candlestick maker, a plumber, you know, you have something to tell somebody. You have a craft. You have a skill you can either share or teach. Here you are teaching English, but wait a second, Kristen, do you speak Spanish?
Un poquito.
Un poquito.
Spanish. I know how to order a cerveza.
Well, you know how to do that in Aspen, darling.
Absolutely.
But here's my question. But here's my question. You're teaching English, but you're not really speaking Spanish. So something tells me you're learning a lot more Spanish than you're teaching English.
It's true. You know, at this level, they want to be in conversation. They want to learn slang. They want to learn idioms. They want to learn how Americans really speak. So when they go and become tour guides or work in a national park, they can actually communicate on a real level with visiting Americans or Canadians or Australians because they're coming here. So it helps them assimilate, and in the end, it'll help them in their job search and become more advanced in their job.
So tell me you're not teaching them English via Jay-Z.
Well, it's funny because they hear a lot of that. And I got from the teacher a list of slang that was clearly all out of a horrible rap song. And I changed a lot of it because, you know, we don't say po-po for the police. We just don't do that. So I deleted po-po. But, you know, there's a lot of...
Ladies and gentlemen, Kristen Russ's contribution to the Costa Rican English Language Program, she deleted po-po.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But they don't know. They do learn some things from rap music, and they don't understand that that's really improper English and many often.
So at the end of the day, you're going to be down in Costa Rica for how long now?
I'm going to be here for 3 weeks.
Okay. Bottom line, give me a dollar figure here. How much did it actually cost you out of your pocket to do this trip?
Well, the programs, if you go to crossculturalsolutions.org, it all lists out how much things cost. And it's about, the minimum 2 weeks is about, I want to say, $2,700. And that includes all of your meals, your lodging, your ground transportation, and excursion. So, and then you have to pay for your airline ticket and your weekend adventures on your own.
Of course.
I highly, highly recommend fundraising. You would be shocked by how generous people will be. People want to live vicariously through you. Not everybody can just do it. So if you find that you're going to do it, whether you're 24 or 64, people want to give. And even if it's $25, it adds up. So you really, really can find frugal ways to do this.
And you're doing a blog, aren't you?
I am.
Well, tell us how we find you on the web.
I'm at travelpod.com. I'm just doing my own type of little personal thing through travelpod.com, and it's really, really fun. It's travelpod.com. Kristen Rust is my name, and it's a great way to just bring it back every day because people really do want to know what you're doing, particularly if they've given to you. It's fun to show, these are the kids that I'm working with at the Children's Hospital today and see how happy they are. So it's nice.
Well, I'm going to come up with a new blog. It's going to call Peter Greenberg, No Popo Where I Go-Go.
Absolutely.
Does that work for you?
That works for me. I think that's very clever.
Well, Kristen, I hope that when you get back, you corral a couple more of your friends in Colorado to take them with you, because that's what this is all about. By the way, crossculturalsolutions.com is on our website as well. It's one of the aid and relief organizations we list as part of volunteer vacations. Remember, the best trip you can do on these things is the gift you give yourself when you do unto others. And, Kristen, congratulations on doing it, and I want you to stay in touch with us, okay?
Thank you. Absolutely, I will.
You got it. That's Kristen Rust, crossculturalsolutions.com. When we come back, more from Art Basel in Miami Beach, petergreenberg.com. Back right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And we're back, 33 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you from Art Basel in Miami Beach, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We've been talking a lot this show about this sort of marriage between a city in Switzerland and Miami Beach and how that all came about and what an event this has become. And some people would say it's really the Olympic event of art, at least in this hemisphere. 2,000 artists, 250 galleries. I did a quick walkthrough earlier today, and you know, the word wow does come to mind. Just amazing stuff. Even if you don't buy a single piece of art, it's fun to watch everybody else do it, or at least attempt to do it. And joining me right now, Annette Schoenholzer, did I get it right? Annette Schoenholzer and Mark Spiegler, who are the co-directors of Art Basel. Hey, guys.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Hi, Peter.
Guys, I mean, did you ever expect it would grow to this kind of a size?
Oh, well, you know, it's hard to predict things in advance.
Because it started pretty small. We go back to 2001. You didn't open because of 9/11.
That's true.
And you had to go the next year, and it was pretty small then. And then all of a sudden, boom.
It was not quite as big as it was now, but it's been a great development of the fair in the past years, and especially in the past 2 years, we've reached a number where we really feel comfortable with down here.
And you know, when somebody says, I hope I'm not going to make anybody in Miami Beach angry, but when somebody says, what's the cultural capital of the United States? Miami Beach doesn't really come to mind as much as Basel does when you talk about Switzerland.
Well, I think a lot of people don't know a lot of things about Miami, and I think one of the things they don't know about is the strength of the private collections here. You have collections like the Rubels, the Dela Cruzes, Margulies, Ella Cisneros that all open to the public during this week and have fantastic shows. And the other thing that people
so these are private collections that anybody can go see.
Exactly.
How cool is that?
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And the other thing that people don't realize is that Miami is sort of where it's the gateway between North America and Latin America, and that's a key element of the show.
No, it's not. It is Latin America.
Well, that's one way to see it.
The gateway's gone. That was knocked down years ago. I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
So that's a really key element, and I think one of the huge success things, the successful aspects of the show.
What are the biggest surprises in a show like this? Because it's an open space inside a relatively old convention center. I mean, you know, but they basically take down the walls and they really construct this open space, and every gallery has their statement, if you will. And every time you turn a corner, it's like, whoa. So what's the biggest surprise this year?
The biggest surprise in the show, that's really hard to say. For us, it's always a big surprise when we come in at the beginning of the week because we never really know what's going to be in those crates. So we're doing whoa all day long now, since yesterday at midday, trying to figure out what's on the floor, but it looks really good to us.
And the pieces range from moderate expensive all the way through to astronomical.
Well, it depends how you measure astronomical, but certainly...
Give me an astronomical.
$3.5 million.
There you go. Yeah. And what was that?
That was a Judd piece at David Zwirner's gallery.
Which, now, for those people, this is radio now, so
right, of course.
Yeah, I need you to paint the picture. Get it?
Right. Donald Judd was one of the great artists of the '60s, known particularly for sort of minimalist sculpture, often out of metals of various colors and types.
And that went for how much?
$3.5 million.
Now I saw a piece earlier today. It was at a Sean, I think Sean King gallery, called The Boat. And it's this video piece, so you're like you're on a cruise ship with big portholes, and the water just keeps going by. It's amazing. Have you seen it?
I actually have seen it. It's at Sean Kelly's gallery.
Sean Kelly, excuse me, yes. And that's an amazing piece. I have to find out more about it because I know I can't afford it, but I stood there and watched it for at least three or four minutes. You know, you can't help yourself, right?
That's right. It's a very strong piece.
How many people end up coming to this over the next couple of days?
It's hard to tell in advance, but we're looking at probably 40,000 people.
Wow. And every year gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but there's also Art Basel in Basel.
That's right.
And that's even bigger, isn't it?
That's a bigger show. It has more galleries participating, and it actually also has more visitors, around 60,000 every year. So it is the mother show, we say. It's also an older show. It's over 40 years old
that's
by
right.
now. So, yeah.
So now next year is your 10th anniversary. What are you going to be doing next year that's going to be, you know, we got a 10th anniversary. What's going to be special?
Well, we'll be tying a ribbon around everything.
Oh, stop it.
We're working on it.
Okay.
We'll talk about next year.
But for those people who've never been down here for this, it is not just confined to the Miami Beach Convention Center. There are events all throughout Miami.
That's right. Many of them are events that we're involved with. We have films, we have concerts, films, performances, videos on the beach. We have a new project called the Oceanfront, where a different city is spotlighted every evening. And then, of course, there are many, many, many things which just come into the slipstream of the show, where people take advantage of the fact that there are so many great people from all over the world to show different artists and artworks and various things of various types.
So the bottom line is, for 3 days, it's pretty intense here.
It's very intense.
Yeah.
So we always tell people to wear flat shoes and take a lot of water.
Exactly. Now, is there any performance art?
There's performance art. We have performance art, not in this building in particular, but down at the Oceanfront, where we're doing the Oceanfront Nights this week. There's a lot of performance, and I would like to point out Saturday night, which is going to be Glasgow, which is a really strong performance scene.
All right. Well, speaking of performance, we're out of time. Annette and Mark, thanks for joining us. I'm going back into luck at the boat. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from Art Basel in Miami right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. 43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Miami Beach Convention Center, but otherwise known as Switzerland, USA. It's Art Basel in Miami Beach. And taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drills. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we'll solve it right here on the air. How appropriate that we're talking about Switzerland in Miami Beach with our next guest, because he's the author of Virtual Travel, Embrace or Expire. And interestingly enough, his name is Barry Schuller, but what's even more interesting is the former CTO of Marriott. Hey, Barry.
Hey, how are you, Peter?
I'm very good. So explain to me how you woke up one morning and decided to talk about virtual travel.
Well, I didn't just wake up one morning. It kind of came on to me over the last 5 years or so as I was working at Marriott. It started when we were looking at, about 6 years ago, we were looking at telepresence technology and doing public access studios for small business meetings via telepresence. And that got me to thinking, what would happen if this actually evolved to be a true, as if you were there, virtual reality kind of experience? And that led me to write the book.
Well, you know, for most of my listeners, I say this almost in an embarrassing way, their idea of virtual travel is going to the Venetian in Las Vegas and making believe they're in Venice.
Yeah, that could be it. But this is more like if you've seen The Matrix or Avatar, it's more like that. It's more like you're being injected into a virtual world, and you really are experiencing Venice, not the Venetian.
All right, so let's talk about that. I mean, how do you travel virtually?
Well, it's going to evolve over the next 20 to 30 years. I believe within 20 years and 30 years for sure, you'll be able to go into a studio and you'll basically go, you'll don a suit, a full body suit, a visor, earplugs for your ears to get the sound, but you'll have a five-sense experience. It'll take you about 10 or 15 minutes to get set up in the studio, and when your experience starts, your brain won't know the difference whether you're in the location that that you're experiencing or whether you're doing it via virtual reality. It would be a three-dimensional, as if you were injected into this physical space. It would be very much like you were there, and you wouldn't know the difference that you were sitting in this studio maybe thousands of miles away.
So basically you would actually go and be insulted in France just in your own home.
You probably in the early days won't be able to do it in your own home. In probably the later part of 30-year to 40-year period, you'll probably be able to do it from your own home. But you might walk down the street like you would now for a teleconference, for a telepresence or a Hewlett-Packard Halo teleconference. You would just walk down 5 to 10 minutes to a studio, and you could be anywhere in the world for 3 or 4 hours or however long you wanted that experience to last.
Now, of course, in order to set this technology up, they're going to have to do almost like what Google did and basically grid, map, and shoot all of these locations, right?
That's absolutely right. It will take a lot of computer horsepower and a lot of network horsepower and content. Everything in the world that people may want to visit, every destination, will need to have current content basically filmed and or videoed and stored. In the future, the virtual world will be very much like video games that you see today, but on steroids. But it will have our world replicated within the electronics, and then you would be inserted into that world via your avatar. And you would not know the difference. Your five senses would not know that it wasn't you speaking to me. We would be sitting across the table from each other now rather than by long-distance telephone.
We're on the threshold now of the true reality of Beam Me Up, Scotty.
Exactly. It's even better. You don't have to physically go. Your body is still at home, but you're experiencing another body as if you were there. It's indistinguishable from reality.
But you know what? There's only one thing that worries me about it, Barry, and that is the airlines are not going to charge me $60 for a virtual bag, $20 for a virtual blanket, $10 for a virtual pillow, and they're going to charge you $100 for virtually bad airline food. What do you think?
That's absolutely correct. What you'll get is we'll be able to eliminate, I think, most of the downsides of travel, physical travel. I mean, you won't travel 7 hours to go to London. You'll travel 10 minutes to a studio, and you'll be in London.
I love it. Barry Schuller, I really appreciate that. The author of Virtual Travel, Embrace or Expire. Back with more from Miami Beach, virtually, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from Art Basel in Miami Beach. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you can email me at peter@petergreenberg.com. Give us your name, your phone number, your question, and your problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We've been talking about the entire show. This is truly an iconic event. Only 9 years old, but it is truly the Olympics in the art world in this hemisphere, Art Basel in Miami Beach. And my next guest knows a little bit about that because he was the director of Art Basel in Basel, too. I mean, he's been everywhere. Hello, Sam Keller. How are you?
Hello, Peter.
I like that voice. Say it again. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Peter.
Oh, I'm loving that. Okay, good. Why Miami Beach for this kind of event?
Well, we thought we should bring a good art show to America. We were asked by collectors and dealers to put one on, and then we had the choice between different cities, and we thought Miami could be strategically interesting because it could connect Europe to North and Latin America. Also, we wanted to have a warm place in the winter. And also, we thought we could make a contribution to the cultural development of this still very young city. And the combination of...
I mean, relative to Basel, Miami's a baby.
Yeah, yes, but a baby that has grown very, very fast.
Now, let's talk about Basel for a second, because when we talk about, and I've talked about this earlier in the show, I mean, in terms of art and science and music, I mean, there's a density there. There's so much history there. In museums alone, you have over 40 museums in Basel alone.
Yeah, that is true. But Basel has a long history with the arts. You know, it was the first city to have a university, and since the Middle Age, it had important artists working there, and it has the world's oldest public art collection. So for almost five centuries, the citizens of Basel have been collecting art. So that became a habit.
Well, not only that, I mean, everybody who's growing up in Basel now is already culturally inclined.
Absolutely, absolutely. And especially now in our times, there have been many patrons of the arts who have put up museums. And especially there is our Basel since 40 years. And a lot of today's art scene is owed to a man, Ernst Beiler. He founded our Basel with his colleagues, and he had one of the most important art galleries in the 20th century, and he put on many large public sculpture shows in the city. So he helped to educate the population about art on the highest quality level.
When you take a look at the way Basel itself as a city is laid out, right on the banks of the River Rhine, and you know, it's one thing to say you have 40 museums. It's another thing to say you can literally walk the city. I mean, Basel is a city made for walking.
Absolutely. It's a small city, and that is also the beautiful thing, that you walk around and all those cultural sites are connected. And we shouldn't only speak about art. Actually, Basel is a great architecture city. It is a city where has the highest concentration of important architects buildings. So it's the city where Herzog and de Meuron, the architects that have built the Bird's Nest for the Olympics, are from, and Renzo Piano, Chipperfield, Zaha Hadid, Mario Botta, many important architects have buildings there. And so there's a lot of people that also, tourists that come to the city to see the art and architecture.
I mean, on one level, it's a medieval town, mm-hmm. and on the other end, it's open air. I mean, it's you know, lots of outdoor sculptures, it's so accessible in a time when accessibility is not often easily found.
Yeah, and that is nice, and it's so central in Europe. So it is at the corner of Switzerland, France, and Germany. Has a German, French, and a Swiss railway station, and has an international airport. And it's the only airport which is trinational. So Switzerland, France, and Germany share an airport.
And happily so. You know, it reminds me a little bit, don't get upset with me when I tell you this, in terms of its geographic proximity to Luxembourg. Because here's Luxembourg, you're right there. There's Belgium, there's France, and there's Germany, and it's like right there.
Absolutely.
I mean, we don't understand those kinds of distances that easily in this country.
No, especially not in this country. It's like... Switzerland is as small as a big American city, so basically if you go from one city to the other, it's like changing boundaries.
Now, here you are in Art Basel in Miami Beach. I mean, this is a staggering exhibit. I mean, and can you actually get through it all in 3 days? It's not easy.
Well, the idea is not that you eat everything that's on the menu. It is that you pick the thing that you like most, and I think you can, if you come to the convention center in one day, you get a great overview about the art of our times. And if you come for a couple of days to Miami, you can also see the museums and private collections, which are extraordinary here. And you can see some of the outside shows, like the design show, which is the best in the country.
And that's if you really want to see furniture and stuff like that. Really, really cool. Sam Keller, the former director of Art Basel, with a great radio voice, by the way. Thanks for joining us. So that music means we are out of time for the show this week. I want to thank, of course, Dennis Dablinsky from Westwood One helping us out back in New York, Ralph Chambers, Jessica Silverman, our producer here, Shelley Goncharowski, our producer in Seattle. Bob Goodman, and Christine Welty, who made it all happen from Basel. We'll see you next week, ladies and gentlemen, for another distant location and another remote opportunity. See you later, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.